Hey guys, it's Anastasia. Before we dive into this episode, I wanted to jump on here real quick from the future because we are in the middle of editing this episode and we're realizing that this episode is going to come out a couple of days before the Golden Geek nominations close on BoardGameGeek. So if you are listening to this sometime before April 21st, 2024 at midnight-ish Central Time, then if you've been enjoying this podcast and you would feel so inclined, if you could go click on the link in the show notes of this episode, there's a link there that will take you to nominate Friendly Ties for the best podcast on BoardGameGeek. While you're there, you can also vote for a bunch of different games, all sorts of things. It's a really cool thing that BoardGameGeek does every year. It would be so awesome if we could get nominated. I always say, we don't need to win. I have no illusions of grandeur here on winning, but it would be super fun to get nominated. So if you guys have a couple of seconds and you could do that, that would be awesome. Now back to the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Friendly Ties podcast. We usually talk about one game, but today the podcast is going to span two games, from the Worms to the Wings. We're comparing Wormspan and Wingspan today. So, there's this new game that just came out. It's kind of about old fake birds. Worms, dragons. Wormspan kind of surprised me when it was first announced a few months ago. And it's kind of like a re-implementation, sort of Wingspan. Super popular game. We've all played it a bunch. We've played Wormspan a few times as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the fascinating things here is that we're talking about two games in the same, not universe, but something.
Right.
With the same core system, but there are two different designers, too.
Yeah.
Like saying that, like, oh, you know, you're playing a worker placement or something. Like, now you're playing a span-style game.
It's a span game. Yeah, exactly. There's two of them. Yeah, so I got Wingspan back in 2019 when that first came out. I played it, looks like, about three-ish times. I sold my copy. I kind of figured I was good with Wingspan. I thought I liked it. It was fine. And then, surprise, here's Wormspan. And the more I read about it, the more interested I got in to play it. And I did get to play it. I've actually played it three times now. And it says you've played it twice. Nick's played it once. And we felt like we had a lot of things to say. In fact, we just finished Nick's first play like 2 hours ago. And I think there's just a lot of thoughts brimming around.
Yeah, I've played Wingspan a really large number of times. obviously, this is only the one for Wormspan, so it's more like the impressions that you're going to hear from me on this. I do want to add, this will be the one episode where I have to make a caveat rather than John making a caveat for being connected, because I actually know I'm in friendly with both the designers. They are in the same area that I live in, and I've been to both of their houses. so fair caveat there.
Why don't we treat this episode a little bit like we treated the last one? Maybe we just do like a quick overview of kind of the central core mechanic that is present, that are present kind of in both games. Like, what should the viewers at home expect?
Right. No, that makes sense.
Between the two.
These are games with big decks of cards, which is kind of popular these days, I think. You know, a large draw deck, I think it's like 160 cards in Wormspan. Seeing just a ton of variety in the cards in your hand and trying to weave something together. In both these games, you play these cards into a tableau in front of you and you kind of run the tableau like a row, just kind of like going bird to dragon to bird to dragon. And both of these games are kind of structured in a way that you are building up an engine of sorts as you are playing it. So you are weak at the beginning and hypothetically very strong and kind of gassed out at the end. There's a lot more nuance going on, but realistically it's about hand management between all these winged beasts that you have here.
Yeah.
So interesting to me that you call it hand management. That would not be the top five things I would mention about this game.
Yeah, I want to hear Nick's version of this. Yeah.
So I would call the core mechanism the action selection. And
me
basically
too. That's funny.
In both the games, it's got, you have three rows, the rows corresponding to the action that you're taking, which is usually get one type of resource, get another type of resource, get a third type of resource. And that resources are like actual like stuff that you pay or cards, and then depending on the game, maybe eggs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a fourth action.
Depending on the game, there are eggs.
There are, yeah, but like there's not a row that's dedicated towards eggs, which is, I think, very significant.
That's true.
There's a fourth action of you can play out new birds, but in Wormspan, there's a fifth action that you can play out new caves, which are required to do new dragons. So it's, mm-hmm. it's only like a two-step process, but really it's the same sort of idea of like you are playing things into these rows. The rows then become superior, as John mentioned. You know, you're setting up your system or your engine, and running through those rows. So the more you play into the rows, the better you are at doing that action.
That is true. It's interesting that I immediately gravitated towards the variety of the cards versus the actually functionally using them. They're both kind of two different ends of the system, I guess, to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting too, though, because I've always thought of it more as a, not even actually, I like how you explained it, Nick, like as an action selection game. And I actually agree with you, John. Like, I like how you explained it. Like, yeah, there is this massive deck of cards that gives you all this variability with the creatures that you are bringing. But I've always thought of it more as a tableau game. You know, just the, like, leaning a little bit to what you were saying, John, of like the engine that you're kind of creating, but more so like what you have this player mat in front of you and the things that you're adding to it. You are, not only are you putting things down that could potentially become a little bit of an engine, give you different things, but you're also collecting things on them and collecting different points, both on the cards and with the things that you can put on the cards. And then there are end of round scoring goals. And so you're trying to put things on your tableau that meet those goals and then meet the, you know, give you more points as you're playing the game. And so it's funny that between the three of us, you can kind of see like everyone looks at the game just a little bit differently. And then also how many layers are kind of like at play with this system, which is tweaked between the two games, but is very much present. It's a very cool system that is present in both games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the first, I guess, real divergence is what Nick said already. Instead of just putting a bird down into the wetlands or whatever, you have to actually dig out a cave to then put the dragon inside of it. And that is an extra thing that you could do, and it's an extra lever, and it definitely changed the feel of the game a lot more than I expected when I first, you know, heard about this new version. Like, okay, you need a cave too. Well, whatever. But it really allowed the game to have a lot of variety injected into it with the stuff that you can get, specifically with the cave excavation. You're not just digging a hole. You're realistically getting a bonus. Like, every time you put one down, there's just a huge variety of stuff that you get.
It's a really interesting design choice, because what it's essentially saying is, We're slowing down the ramping up, the building up your engine, your row, your power, because you have to take two actions instead of one. But what we've given you instead with these excavations, they give you a one-time bonus. So essentially, it says, hey, here's another way to get resources that isn't taking kind of the primary row actions, which does not really exist in a Wingspan. In Wingspan, it's really just kind of those like core actions. In Wormspan, there's a lot of different ways to get resources. And it's funny, I think if you look at the rule book, I wouldn't say that Wormspan comes across as terribly heavier than Wingspan, but when you play the game, it does, because I think there's a lot of different places that you can get those inputs from. Whereas in Wingspan, it's like, you want food? You go to the food row, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Seriously, when we sat down to play Wingspan last week, right after we'd played Wormspan, same day, I think. Actually.
That's right. We played them in the same day. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember looking at the board and being like, oh, okay, then. It's just like, you want eggs? Go to the egg row. You want food? Go to the food row. You want birds? Go to the bird row. Like, it's not these kind of like multi-step or multi-layered or kind of like, ooh, this triggers this, and then I get this, and then I get this, and then I get that. So this, I think Wormspan, if I was going to make a kind of a summation, you know, as we're kind of starting to get dive in and go deeper into the mechanics, for me, Wormspan feels like more of a gamer's game. Like, it took the Wingspan elements. It added in a lot of more gamer heavy, I'm not going to say heavy, but like mid-weight gaming elements yeah. that, you know, we're seeing a lot of those chains, the combos, the things, some of which are present in Wingspan, but it really, it does kind of take it, add in just enough other elements to kind of have a lot more different things happen, mm-hmm. you know, immediately or later, or this or that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's one of the beauties of Wingspan, and I think why it's been successful is because the actions, you know, they're interwoven with each other. Like, if you want to get food, you have to go to the food row. You want to get cards, you got to go to the card row. You want to get eggs, you got to go to the egg row. And all of these things kind of like require, or like diagonally require you to like do things in other places. And the birds that people point to in Wingspan as being like imbalanced, they destroy that ecosystem of like having to do this and then this and then this. Whereas in Wormspan, exactly as you're saying, Anastasia, because you've got these like different places you can get things from, a little bit more of a gamer's game, because you can say, ooh, okay, I can do this. It's not A to B to C. It's like, I could do A and then kind of like steal this over here and put that together and cobble together my next action for this, which will then let me like snowball a little bit more. And so I think that's why Wormspan feels like the heavier, more of the like gamer, like efficiency game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's just so many more options available to you. Like, that really hit me over the head when we played Wingspan later on in the same day we played Wormspan. It's like, oh, this is just the, not that it's a like a dumber game to play through, like there's still a lot to think about there, but I feel like there's like twice as many blinking lights demanding my attention to potentially combo in Wormspan. So one kind of subtle but really impactful difference between these two games is how you run those rows. Like you said, in Wingspan, you have the draw cards row, you have the get food row, and you have the make eggs row. And you can put birds into those rows, and looking at the deck at a high level, it seems like most of the birds activate when you activate that row. Like, you put a bird into the draw cards row, that bird likely has some sort of an effect that lets you draw cards in some way. Not all the time, but like there's a heavy reliance on that kind of connection. And when you run those rows in Wingspan, you do the base action, but you do it better with more birds. It's just, you do, you know, if you take one food early, and if there's a couple birds, now you take two food immediately. But in Wormspan, it spreads out the base actions across multiple birds and allows the I said birds across multiple beasts and allows the dragons in this case to be a lot more varied. When you activate the rows in Wormspan, you are still going from one end to the other. It's left to right instead of right to left. But it seems like so many of the dragons in Wormspan don't activate actually when you have your little explorer walk across it. They give you victory points for doing this and that and the other thing. They give you one-shot effects as soon as you put it down. And those exist in Wingspan. But playing the game of Wingspan, it felt like 80% of the cards were all about activating something when you activate that row, but Wormspan has so many more baked in things. You like do a base action, then you potentially do the dragon, then another thing on the board, then dragon, then board, then dragon, then board, then dragon. And it allows the design space to have a lot of those dragons not actually do anything. You just kind of skip by them because that dragon did something when you played it, and then you move on. Okay, the board's going to give you something beneficial now. And it made me feel like it allowed the design space to have a lot more different things on the dragon cards, if that made sense. Like, we were playing earlier, and Nick played a card, the first dragon he played, and this was my third play, and I was like, wait, what does that do? I looked over, and it activated based off what the person to his left was doing. And that was the first dragon I had seen that had anything to do with the person on your left, and this was my third play. It's like, okay, that it felt like the stuff was just a lot more varied in that big deck.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you mentioned in there about it feels like fewer of the dragons have that sort of like when you run this row kind of like system. And I think that that's, it feels like it's an intentional choice. I think that it is a reflection of the fact that the core rows are just fundamentally stronger. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes longer for the core action in Wingspan to get better than it does in Wormspan. And in Wingspan, you really want those like brown, when you activate this row, birds to be in the rows that you're going to be running. And ideally, you know, you're playing those like one-off bonuses into rows that you're not running quite as often. That's true in Wormspan, but the rewards for those like one-off bonuses are spicy enough that you could throw it in a row that you're planning on running a number of times. And the row's core strength itself is already good enough that you can get away with doing that and not feel like, I think, as punished maybe by like not having sort of the right sequence of birds sitting in a row or dragons sitting in a row.
I think there's something, though, that I want to pull back on here as we're talking about these rows, because one thing I did notice in Wingspan was that the birds that came out, and some of this helps because Wingspan is about birds, right? And even if you're not an ornithologist, most of us still know a good number of birds, right? Like, if nothing else, it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know what a hawk is. You might not know what, like, 14 different varieties of hawks are, but like you sort of have a sense of
there's a
grounding, an eagle, a blue jay, whatever. And in addition to that, we have a sense of like there are birds that you just like kind of know, or by the art you're like, oh yeah, that's a wetlands bird, right? Or that's a prairie bird. And like, I think that there is something incredibly thematic that ties into feeling like when you're going to select a bird in Wingspan, there's this element of being like, oh yeah, that's a wetlands bird. Like, you either it's telling you that, or you might notice that or whatever, but there's a thematic pull towards this is going to go on the bottom. And I understand that the actions for each row, like they're obviously reusing it here to tie it in more to the mechanics of the game and probably to help balance the game and how different things work together, again, to create that efficiency, to create that engine. But I do think that there's a thematic loss here, and also just a little bit of like me feeling like, oh, I'm not looking at a dragon and being like, why does that need to go in the top, or why does it need to go? It makes me think more like, oh, because of that's how the game works, rather than, oh, this is a wetlands bird. This is a forest bird, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. And it makes me sad to say that, because I love dragons and I don't care about birds. But I pay attention to the bird cards, and like, I like, you know, where it like shows me what their like ranging is. I like the little bird facts that are on them. And the dragon art is really pretty. But beyond that, the card doesn't have the personality for me.
No, it's all about what the card does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a more mechanical experience in that way.
Yeah. The first time I played it, I remember distinctly saying like, I wish this was the bird one. And I don't really care about birds either. But yeah, I think that is a big thematic loss between the two. It just felt a little bit more generic. You know, it's like, oh, I have a angry, I think I had a rocky rock biter, and then I have an angry amphitheater. And then that doesn't mean anything to you. Like, when you see the names of these, but it doesn't mean anything in an entertaining way either. Like, a lot of bird names don't mean anything in particular, but they're hilarious.
There was one dragon tonight where I was like, oh, I know what that is. That's from Harry Potter. Like, it's not actually, but the type of dragon was this dragon that I recognize.
The funny thing is that I do actually know for a fact that Connie considered what the dragon types were, and like did actual like dragon lore research to like figure it out. So actually there is a thematic thing, but there's none of that exists in like the cultural anything. And like, I'm someone who like plays Dungeons and Dragons, and I don't know the things.
Well, I will admit I saw some of that. Like I said, like I did recognize some dragon names, and it does feel like the theme is there. I'm not going to sit here and say that theme is pasted on, because the element of the caves and putting the dragons out and their hatchlings and all the things that we're going to start talking about, it's there. It's just not tied in, I think, as well as the way that the birds were tied into the habitats and all of the elements in Wingspan. But so, speaking of the rows, and if we're going to talk about this, the mechanics of these rows, I do want to kind of just take a moment to talk about the major way the actions function in Wingspan versus Wormspan. Because we've talked about how, like, in Wingspan, basically, you go and you run. There are four actions. You're either going to play a bird, or you're going to run each of those three rows that we talked about. And in Wormspan, on the side of your player board, they make it really clear that there's technically five actions, but they've actually kind of pulled those out on the side. So it's like, the first one is you can go excavate, which is put caves down. And that's what Nick was referring to earlier with the two-step process of you need to make room for your dragons before you can put them out. The second one is just like in Wingspan, it's play dragons, just like in Wingspan, play birds. And the last one is explore. And so what they've done is kind of pulled that action away from the concept of the row itself is an action space. And so you're still going, it's functionally exactly the same. You basically say, I'm going to take the explore action, and then you go pick a row, and then you can run one of the three rows.
Mm-hmm.
But it, for me, there's just something about that that it just works better for my brain. I don't know why, but I never quite clicked with Wingspan. It always took me too long to like grok every time I played it, no matter how many times I've played it. It always takes me like a round to be like, wait, I'm going to select this and then run the row and then do my birds. Like I never quite got that. And functionally, again, it's basically the same here, but you also have a little explorer token. You move that person, that explorer, along the track.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps to kind of be like, to just kind of pull, just changes slightly the thinking, which, speaking of theme, actually for me works really well here. It's like you actually, instead of just being like, I'm running a row, you're like, cool, I'm going to go explore. I'm going to move my explorer along this track. And it's going to do lots of different things as he kind of moves along.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with, there's something about it being very kinetic with the picking up the guy and moving it to the various places. The action of the excavate and the entice, are written out detailed on the left side of the board, or you can like, you know, that could be like where you toss your coin so you can track your actions. Whereas in Wingspan, in order to like take that build a bird action, it like goes in this like tiny little row at the top of the board, like an Excel sheet where they forgot to like expand the
the row. I mean, I think that kind of comes back to a point I was making a little bit earlier. Like in Wingspan, it feels like most of the decision space is, what row do I run on my turn? It's my turn. What row do I run?
Yeah.
Oh, I could put a bird down. Whereas in Wormspan, I feel like it's kind of the opposite. Like, it's almost like I'm putting off running rows because you get so much, you do so much when you put dragons down. Like, so many dragons give you an immediate effect, and every cave gives you an immediate effect. So when you start the game, you have six actions that you could do in the first out of four rounds. You could go many actions without touching any of the rows because you kind of want to make the rows better before you actually run them because you have a limited number of actions. And you could just go deeper. You could just do so much more because you play a cave that gives you a meat and a gold. Well, cool. Now you don't have to run your resources row that is really weak at the beginning of the game. It's only going to give you one resource. But I put this cave down and suddenly it gives me two. Like, that's even better. It just, it made the running of the rows almost feel like a special thing. Like, okay, now it's time to explore the cave. Whereas in Wingspan, it felt like almost every turn it was like, okay, what row? You know, it really shifted that kind of, I don't know where my brain was with it. And in one way they also shifted it is they limit it in Wormspan.
Yeah.
In Wingspan, you can activate a row as many times as you have actions for. But in Wormspan, you can't activate a row more than three times in a round. And in fact, the second time you activate it, it costs you an egg, which is a victory point. And the third time you activate it, it costs you two eggs. So it really feels like from an incentives perspective, the game is trying to say, you know, go back into that cave if it makes sense for you. But I don't know, you're starting to spend a lot of points to actually do that. Maybe you should focus on something else, which it did feel surprisingly different from a headspace perspective.
Yeah, and it's not as easy because there's no egg row in Wormspan. There's no, like, it's not so easy to get eggs. Once you get deeper into the cave and you've have more dragons and you've explored more, sure, you can make lots of eggs. But until then, you're going to have a lot harder time finding eggs. And I do think that is one element too. At the end of every round, you actually do just get an egg, which I think is probably something to kind of help kind of keep the game moving along in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, since we're talking about the egg row, that I think is a really good segue into, I think, to me, the biggest difference between these two games from a strategic perspective. So in Wingspan, you know, it's pretty common that at the end of the game, you're like, great, I'm going to take the egg row action a whole bunch of times because that's where victory points are, having extra resources, having extra cards. Like, those aren't victory points at the end of the game. There are some exceptions, but mostly, you know, at the end, it's like eggs, 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 game over.
Mm-hmm.
And as you guys are already mentioning, in this game, an egg shows up near to the end of every row. And then at the end of every row, there's some way to convert that row's resources into victory points. So the food row says, all right, throw that food on dragons. That's victory points. The cards row says, throw those cards underneath dragons. That's victory points. The caves row says, pitch those caves, get some eggs. Those are victory points. So it's essentially set up that if you complete any one of these rows, you can jam it at the end of the game for points. But as John said, you are limited to only doing it up to three times in the final round of the game. And so I think that's a really interesting and clearly deliberate choice to say, look, you're not going to be able to just do one thing over and over again. So acknowledge that that's going to be part of your game plan. But also, really, no matter what you choose your game plan to be, you're going to be rewarded for it later. Whereas, you know, you might build a really sick food, you know, engine in Wingspan and get to the end of the game and be like, oh, my food engine is dumb. I need to do something else.
Well, and I think it's really interesting in this game because I actually did, I sort of tried to do the Wingspan strategy in the game we played tonight of Wormspan. I filled up my cave row, and then I had this really cool, what I thought was really cool kind of engine going. I was running my cave row, and at the end of the cave row, it's get rid of caves, get rid of the excess caves that I had in my hand and make lots of eggs. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have so many points in eggs because, of course, Wingspan, points in eggs, right? But apparently, dragons don't lay quite as many eggs as birds. So I did not have enough room to hold all of the eggs that I was capable of making. And I've never had that experience at the end of Wingspan. I've always felt like, oh my gosh, you know, to your point, Nick, just run the egg row, eggs, eggs, eggs. But in this game, I realized like, oh, I didn't do enough to create space to be able to do this. And it required, just as you're going to kind of hear over and over with this game, just a little bit more thinking of like, oh, I needed to have dragons that had space for that. And also because there is actually baby dragons, hatchlings. There are baby dragons in this game. And those hatchlings, speaking of what John was saying earlier, where every card does different things and kind of changes and has these elements, hatchlings play just a little bit differently than the adult dragons. And they don't lay eggs because yes. They're
in fact,
babies.
They eat an egg. Well, they take they an egg
eat
to
an
go,
egg.
But yeah.
So exactly. So there's a different element at play.
Yeah. Actually, you know, we were talking a little bit down about the thematic integration earlier with the names and everything, but there is some pretty fun thematic connections. And those hatchlings, the game we just played last night, hatchlings were incentivized in the second round. You got some
last night. It's already been a whole night. He says 2 hours.
Well, for me, it actually is last night.
Yes. And so we all had a lot of hatchlings. And this is my third play. The previous two plays, one of them, I didn't put a single hatchling down. The second game, I think I had one. And I didn't really focus on it. This game, all three of us really focus on hatchlings in a big way. And they actually kind of, you feed them. So your explorer goes into the cave, and they kind of wander through the cave. They say hey to all the dragons, and they give you stuff. But every time your explorer meets a hatchling, the hatchling says, please feed me meat, or please feed me milk. And if you feed the hatchling it, then it's going to give you a bonus. And that's just another way to kind of run your overall engine while thematically getting that tie-in. And when you feed the third thing to the hatchling, it thematically grows up, and it gives you a really big bonus. Like, one of my hatchlings let me excavate a card from my hand for free when I gave it its third piece of meat. And that was a really impactful play because it meant I didn't have to spend some eggs and whatnot getting back to the mechanics. But I thought it was kind of fun. Like, I almost envisioned the explorer, like, you know, patting the little hatchlings on the head as he like trekked through the cavern. It's like, oh, I made sure to bring some meat for this one, and I made sure to bring some milk for that one.
Yeah, the hatchlings are a thematic slam dunk for sure.
Absolutely.
Mechanically, they're pretty interesting. I think there's definitely some discussion online about like how good they are. I'm very curious. I'll have to play more to like get my own sense, but you know, they allow you to convert your food into points, right, by putting them on the hatchling, that they're points. And then, as you said, they give you like a little thing back, so they kind of they basically filter points. They do have things like that in Wingspan. I don't think it optically operates the same, but I think functionally, right, like putting a resource in, you get a point for doing that, and then maybe you get some other reward. That exists in Wingspan too. So the hatchlings are different, but they're not as different as I've seen people talking about them, except for the growing up part, which is just a cute little bonus I love.
Yeah. And it does, I must admit, make the idea at first when you look at a hatchling, you're like, why would I want to put the time and energy? I remember at the beginning, because we had a reward for hatchlings in this game. I think it was at the end of the second round, and I was like, Nick and John were taking them. I was like, I don't want to be a mom. Like, let's move on. Like, yeah. I don't want to raise them. I don't want to give them eggs or milk or deal with them, right? Like, because they need things, right? Like, they need it. They don't need it, but, you know, every time you run your row, you want to give them their meat or their milk, mm-hmm. or whatever it is they want, because then they grow up and then they give you this really great bonus. And I think that's super fun. And I don't think I even realized until I started to take a few, I was like, oh, they take this thing. And then, as John said, they give you something back immediately. So I remember I was running. And I was like, okay, I give you a milk and then you give me a milk back. Oh, okay. Like, there, just, it was like,
too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Like, they seem kind of like sus at first blush, because you're like, do I really want to be paying resources into you right now? Like, that doesn't seem great. But they are the way to, you know, if you have the right hatchling, it lets you get a resource that you would normally get from a different row.
Right. And then
so,
convert it.
Yeah. So there's a nice little like system there. So, like, I think it makes a lot of sense to build a game plan around what your hatchling situation looks like.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, in this game we just played, I didn't touch the excavate row on the bottom until like my second to last action of the entire game. And I did that because at the very beginning of the game, I put two hatchlings into my draw dragons row. Then those hatchlings let me get cave cards. So right from the very beginning, significantly more so than you would ever see in Wingspan, I customized my draw dragons row to be a draw dragons and draw caves row. And I explored that so many times in this game, to the point where it's like, I don't even need to go down below to the get caves row, because I have a cave and dragon row already. And that was just kind of cool to, like, you know, customize these things around. And also, there are some themes I noticed mechanically between the dragons, like the dragons that activate in the middle row, which is draw dragons. Like, there's some of them kind of seem like they match up together, but there are also a few dragons and caves that let you swap dragons on your board. So that means you can really do some interesting combinations of things. Like, you play a dragon to the middle row, because that's where it has to go, and then you swap it to the top row. So suddenly you run your top row and you get some resources, and you also get some dragons, and then you get some resources. And it just, there's so many little and medium-sized levers all over the place that you can pull to kind of customize this little pop-off thing that you're putting together.
All of the things that we're saying, if you've played Wingspan, like, you're gonna hear that and you'll be like, oh yeah, isn't there that bird that does that kind of like jumps between rows or does this? Like, it takes all of these little cool mechanics that were from Wingspan, but then does kind of just change them just subtly enough and tweaks them into the system, where it's like, it's not just about, oh, this bird kind of moves here and here. It's just kind of like cranking that up and being like, yeah, but now you can really like change the way you're constructing the engine that you're creating at the top and the bottom, and just kind of, I think there's a lot of potential here to really be able to look at the game and be like, oh, I can really work with what's in front of me, mm-hmm. And have a lot of fun with how that's going to play out mechanically in the game.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I didn't expect to feel so different was the way actions are actually handled between these two games. You know, in Wingspan, if I remember correctly, I think you start in the first round, you get 8 actions to use. And it's use it or lose it. Got to use them. The second round, it's 7, then 6, then 5. So as you go deeper into the game, there's less things you can do within that overall round. But hypothetically, those actions are more impactful because you've put birds down into your rows, etc. In Wormspan, it throws that idea out the window of like de-escalating the number of actions you have. Every round in the 4-round game, you get 6 action coins that you can spend. And there's a ton of ways to get extra actions. I've seen multiple rounds where people take like 9, 10, 11, 12 actions in a single round, even though they started with like 6 or 7, because you can get so many more through various different ways. And I thought that was kind of an interesting design departure, you know, with the first game, like specifically saying near the end of the game, your actions are going to be good, so you get less of them. And here it's just like, go wild, you know, 6 every single round.
A lot
and then
more
just
control.
See how much you can
and you can
off.
Pass. You can pass and just save them and then have 10 actions in a round if you want to. You just have a lot more control over how you use them.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes the game a bit longer. I mean, I don't think there's any getting around that. Like, you just take more actions. I haven't done the math going 8765 versus 6666, but it just feels like you do so many more. I guess because there's a lot of ways to get bonus actions.
But you can get more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in Wingspan, it's a fixed amount.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, this is probably my least favorite part about Wormspan.
Yeah,
if I'm truth be told. Yeah. So first of all, I know the reason that this exists, the like 666 versus 8765, is that the 8765 is like a point of complaint for other folks. Like they don't like that they get, why do I get fewer actions as the game goes on? I like it. I like that it says like, hey, you're better at stuff, so make it work. Like I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And I also think that it's really, really important that board games do not get to a state where you have everything fully assembled. To me, a board game that gets to a state where everything is fully assembled and you are allowed to run your maximum engine more than like one or two times is a game that goes on for way too long and becomes boring. And I think most game designers know this and most game players don't know this. Another really great example of this is like Terra Mystica, which if you've listened to other podcasts, a game that I really love, but people are like, wow, six turns, I don't get to like get everything out. It's like, once you have everything out, there is no game left to play.
Right.
So just like, it is about the journey of building up to that and the challenge of like that push and pull. I think the same is true for the span style games. In Wormspan, the fact that it's not the fact that it's 666. Like I like that it's 8765. So that was my first point of defense. In Wormspan, the 666 thing is fine. The part that I don't like is that you can get the extra turns by getting the coins or saving things. And so the downtime of like some of these rounds becomes, I think, to the point of being painful at points. Like, you know, if what happened in this like game that we played tonight is that John had more actions in the second round of the game than Anastasia and I did, and then Anastasia and I had more actions than John did on the third round, and it was like he literally got up, left the game,
for
over 5 minutes.
No, I actually
and came back
it.
And missed nothing.
I it was 20 minutes. Between me passing and me finally like, okay, the
and
round's
you came
over.
Back and we weren't done.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I know.
It's because like I personally, I checked it. I had taken 12 actions, not six, in the third round, right? And there's nothing that like component of like the irregular turns between players is a little too much in this game for me. I think that it creates these situations where folks can like really slow down. And the downtime thing is already a problem in Wingspan and Wormspan for me. Like, it's not that the games are too long. It's just that, like, because the games are on the multiplayer solitaire side, and I'm just saying that as a fact, not as a burn, there's not a ton for me to do on other people's turns.
And speaking of the downtime, it's not just from, there's a lot of turns. Like, we've talked a lot about running rows, and again, Anastasia and I played Wormspan and Wingspan in the same day, and I was almost shocked when we played Wingspan later on that day at how fast you run those bird rows.
So fast.
There's birds on there that do things as you go down. It might be like draw two cards and then discard one, or you know, get an extra food, or everybody gets a food from the bird feeder. But it was pretty breezy to get through these, and frequently, once you get your cave, even to the halfway point or on, there's so many steps. You do so many things. I remember in my very first play of this one, my friend Dave, it felt like he had done 10 things and he had gone two steps in his cave, because this is a very combo-y game, way, way, way more than Wingspan. Like, he went onto a thing that let him draw and excavate a cave from the top of the deck. That card that he drew just happened to let him activate the placement bonus of a dragon he had already put down. Okay, now he has to look at all his dragons. Oh, this placement lets me draw and excavate a card from the top of the deck. So he does that again, and it just went on and on. And at one point, I was just like, are you really not done? And he's like, I've got like five more things to do.
And that was one turn, right? That was one coin. That was one action coin.
One single turn, yeah. Exactly. Like, there's all these like tangential combo blow-ups that you could do, which is fun when you're the person doing it. Well, fun with a side of guilt. Like, it almost feels like, sorry, everybody, I'm just going to do this, and it'll take a food, you know, I'll figure out what the food is later. Sorry. And then I'm going to go here, I'm going to draw a dragon. I'm just going to draw random so I don't have to look at, like, because you always feel guilty the amount of time that you're taking. Like, I'm not even going to look at the phase-up dragons. I'll just draw random so that, you know, I can get through this process so that the next person can likely do the same exact thing, you know, in the mid to late stages of the game.
Well, when you think about it, it's what you said, Nick. It's like it is multiplayer solitaire, but where the interaction is in the cards that are available, the caves that are available, and the dragons that are available. So you can only plot so much because, sure, maybe I'm going to draw three caves, you know, when I run my bottom row, but I can't figure that out until John's taking his turn and Nick's taking his turn, and now I can run my row. Well, the caves could have changed, you know, while we're waiting. So you start doing this, and I remember multiple times this evening, I was like, okay, so I'm going to need to take three caves, but actually in the middle, I have to discard a cave. And so I was like looking at the cave row, and I was like, okay, wait, so I got to figure out the cave now because I don't want to take the cave I want. I have to take a cave I don't want because I'm going to have to discard that cave because discarding that cave is going to have me move on the Dragon Guild, and then I'll get to draw another cave. And then so I need to make sure the cave that I want is still there. Like, it's, you can't even condense it down into I get three caves, I have to get rid of one, because the order of these things actually does matter. And so it does create these really lengthy chains. And, you know, it's like a lot of Euros these days. If you're used to playing games where you have these big combo-y pop-off turns and you're like waiting for people to do all their stuff, this is going to feel familiar in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that for me, the ideal would be someone figuring out a way to make this style of game allow players to play simultaneously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it doesn't work because there's a public card row that you can draw from, and that's the thing that really mitigates it. But like in our last round of this game, we were like, all right, well, we're not drawing more dragons. All of us have our caves all in play, so no one's drawing more caves. And it was just like, you run your row, you run your row, you run your row, you run your row, you run your row. There wasn't the same like navigation of what do I pick up, what do I put down. And then in Wingspan, the problem is they have like a couple birds that interact with people, just enough birds that interact with people in between turns that like you can't just kind of like overlap turns with each other. And someone needs to figure out a way to make this system let everybody play at the same time, because if we could play this game in 35 minutes, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Before we move off of, what are we going to call this? The action coin, the number of actions that you get per round, that
action
system.
Count. Yeah.
The action count. Yeah. I do want to say a little something kind of in defense of it. Because I hear you, Nick, and I hear what you're saying about, you know, having all those actions and then being able to get more of them. And the thing is, like, there is something really satisfying and fun about that, especially in this game where there is, you know, so much popping off and different things you can do. It is really great to be like, cool, I can get another action coin by doing this, and then I could do a little bit more. And so you it really feels more open and free than it does in Wingspan, where suddenly you're like, okay, I only have, you know, five actions this round, so like this is all I can do. Like, I do actually really like that. I like that you can do that. Obviously it has its downsides here in terms of how many actions different players can get, but you know, I also like the way that there are dragons that basically eat those action coins. I guess I thematically it's probably you have to spend more time with them, training them, whatever, but it also is a nice way to balance out some of the really powerful dragons. And I think that's really cool too, especially early on. Like in our the first game that John and I played, he had two dragons in his initial hand that both needed to eat these actions, and so he somehow managed to get them both down. I'm telling this correctly, right?
Yeah. I got them both down in the first round. That's all I did.
Exactly. That's all he did. He starts with six actions and he uses, you know, essentially four of them to get these two dragons down, but they were so powerful and they worked so well for him all game. But, you know, he ate a lot of action flexibility by doing that. And I think that is really interesting. But the last thing that I'll say on this is that in that first play, the action coins, having the six actions and having that flexibility to pass and then wait for the second round and then build. And finally, everything kind of came together for me in the third round. But being able to kind of save my actions to then have my game play out the way I wanted it to play out in the third and fourth round, let me play a game where I was able to build and then kind of get everything to kind of come together. And you can't do that in Wingspan. You don't have that flexibility. So that was my very long-winded way of saying that I really like the flexibility and the control that having the kind of like, you're going to get 24 actions in this game. We're going to give you 6 each round, and you can get more. You're probably definitely going to get more, but you get to control how and when you use those 24 actions over the course of these 4 rounds, with obviously the limitation of only getting refilling 6. I really like that. I really like that. And so for me, it's an improvement.
For sure.
You talked a lot about control in that last section there. And there's something that I've kind of been really wanting to bring up as far as comparing these two games. And that is randomness. We have a big deck of cards in both of these games. That's, you know, functionally similar as far as I can tell. But in Wingspan, you roll dice to get resources as opposed to just getting the resources that you generally want.
Yeah,
and
huge difference.
As you mentioned, in Wingspan, there are these goals that you start the game with. You get 2 of them. You choose 1. There are birds that you can play that give you more of these hidden goals. You can get lucky with those, and you can get really unlucky. You can play a bird in the middle of the game and get a goal that's going to give you a pile of points, or maybe it's just nothing. And this is a very stark contrast for me, because the day we played Wormspan in the morning and Wingspan in the afternoon, when we played Wingspan, I picked up a goal. And in the bottom, it told me 11% of the cards matched this goal. It was the birds that are named after people, like, you know, Anna's sparrow or something like that. And I was like, cool, 11% of the cards are like this. And we proceeded to go the whole game. I literally never had a single card that was named after somebody in my hand. And I literally never saw one of those cards in the display. It became a joke. Like, we're just laughing. You know, I kept drawing blind and just laughing as I proceeded to never draw these cards. You know, I probably drew 30, 40 cards, and I never
hit
that
11%. Yeah, you had like a card engine going. You could not see.
And that was and I think I lost that game to you by a handful of points. And I remember feeling like, I'm not like beating myself up about it or even mad at the game, but I just remember sitting there thinking, like, I'm so glad this isn't in Wormspan. You know, that thing where you're just like, okay, I have a goal, and then you just have to get lucky. and it was just it was almost like a humorous anecdote to really highlight that one particular difference between these games.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the variance differences, obviously the bonus cards from Wingspan are very variable, just in terms of like how accessible they are and what you can draw to make that happen. I don't find that I mind the bird feeder die rolling thing as much as other people do in Wingspan. I think because it's like a known quantity, like what things are out there and what things are not out there. So I kind of, it like responds to the game state, and like you're required to respond to the game state. So I don't think I mind it quite as much as others. Obviously you can get really hosed by it, but the core variance for both games is what cards you draw off the deck. So to me, I think that it feels like they're both equally wild in that way. And I'm okay with that because I think it's part of the design.
Yeah, I guess my point is just you don't have a second set of luck on the luck that you have drawing already. Yeah, but also there's also a ton of dragons that give you points at the end of the game. And it's very possible to only draw end game dragons that aren't good for you. So,
yeah, you know, like... yeah. But that is a change, right? Like, the dragons themselves now provide those end game points. So you get to choose more as you're playing the game, and you also might not find them. Like, I didn't actually, in this last play, I could barely find any. I was like, I need to find some of these, you know, to come out of the deck. But, you know, to touch on that, the bird feeder, I think there is something, again, and, you know, I really want to give credit to both of these games for the little thematic elements. Like, there is something so fun about, like, you roll the food dice and then you're foraging for food, and it's like, what food is available to you, right? Like, it's not just like, oh, I can have anything. And it for me in Wingspan, I think it ties in really well. It annoys me because, you know, you can get really hosed, right? Like, you can't get what you need. Or, you know, speaking of interaction, it's some of it's a lot more blatant interaction with the bird feeder with the other players than there is even with the card roast.
I can remember frequent swearing from you every time I took a die from that bird feeder.
Like, and you talk about the hate drafting you could do. Like, you have the choice. You're like, do I take the one with 2 food or the other one? Well, it doesn't matter to me, but it's worse for John. I mean, like, for us in that one play, it was like constantly being like, I better take this because the other one's just way better for John. So there is even like straight up hate drafting in the dice, right? Like, and that's just a component of how the food works in Wingspan. So I really like seeing it lifted here, honestly, just because it's fresh. Like, it's fun to be like, oh, I can get any food I want. But it also adds some AP. Like, there was quite a bit, you know, when it's random, you take what you can get, right? And now there is a lot more of like, what do I need? And the plotting and the thing. I mean, this last round of the game, I remember I had all my action coins laid out. You know, I had like, I think I had 8, 7 of them or something. I had them all laid out. And then under each one, I had laid out the resources I needed with like little gaps for the ones I had to get from the previous resources. I mean, I literally had like a map of like how I was going to like play this. I was like, convert this into this and then put it here and here. And, you know, my ability to do that is because there's no bird feeder. There's no random dice rolls of food, right? Like, I can know what I'm going to be able to take and how I'm going to be able to do that. And, you know, for this game, I think it works really well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Dragon Guild?
Yeah, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The board.
Nick, very much like you, the Dragon Guild.
And really?
I can't believe I'm saying that because it's so basic. Like, the Dragon Guild is literally a track that you can advance on. All your rows can advance you on it if you have at least one dragon in play. And it just gives you a reward, and the rewards are like a cycle of, it's basically a picture of all the different rewards you can get in the game.
Yep.
And you bump into them. You make no choices. You just bump into it. The next one that comes up is there. And I think I really like it for two reasons. One is the game acknowledges that it's a game about needing to have everything, right? Like, it's like, yep, there's all this stuff here and there's this track and it gives you the stuff that's there. You don't get to choose what order you get it in, but it's all there. So you can get your things here. And the reason I really like it is because you're like, oh, I'm really good at getting food and I'm really good at drawing cards, but I'm crap at getting cave cards. And then all of a sudden you're like, and the Dragon Guild, it gives me a cave card.
Yeah,
it solved a problem that I didn't have a way of solving. And like that, the occasional like dopamine trip of like, I have bumped into the thing that I needed is just, I just really liked that a lot for a thing that is literally go up this track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does a lot of heavy lifting for me.
Yeah. And this is, absolutely, you know, we've been comparing Wingspan and Wormspan a whole bunch. This is just totally new. Like,
yeah,
it's totally unique to this game. Yeah. Like, there's really nothing to compare between them. So, like, when you say, oh, there's more going on in Wormspan, I think I usually see the Dragon Guild in my head pop up. And I have to agree. I really like it as well. It's like you are exploring the caves and then boom. Dragon Guild happens. Sometimes it causes the game to go a little longer because it's like, oh, surprise, you get to draw a dragon. Okay, hold on a second. I didn't realize I was going to draw a dragon. Let me take a look at the dragons over there. But on top of that, every time you reach the halfway point on this circular track, you get to put a cube onto a menu of bonuses. And there's 4 different quote-unquote menus. There's 4 different guilds in the game. I think we had the Highlands Guild today, and there's
your
like
Dragon Guild, sir.
Yeah, and there was a Plains Guild, and there's just a bunch of these. And I've actually played with 3 out of the 4 now, and that not only adds some variability from one game to the next because they have different ways to score conditional points, but you also get in each other's way. Like the one that we had tonight, there was one spot that said you get a point for every cave that you add onto your board. That was essentially the Cave Dragon Guild. And I got there first, and I got 9 points out of it. It was great, and I remember Anastasia was really bummed. She was right behind me. So it adds also another moment of tension. Like, yeah, you're getting all these bennies, and then every halfway around, it's like, ooh, what can I take to stop other people from taking it?
I also really like the Dragon Guild board for the same reasons you do, Nick. Like, having this Dragon Guild is just this like little extra thing that you get to do, and it's in every row. I think that's an important distinction. We were talking this whole episode about how the rows are a little bit different. You know, every row has its thing. So, you know, and it's food, dragons, caves, right? But that's the first column. And then the next column is move on the Dragon Guild. So if you just have one dragon, you get to do both of those things. You get to do the thing of the row and you get to move on the Dragon Guild. And then the following one, just following column, repeats the first one, right? So it's just this little change that's in every single row, but it makes a difference because of what we've been talking about. The Dragon Guild is all sorts of different things. Sometimes it's a resource, sometimes it's a dragon, sometimes it's a cave, sometimes it's an extra action coin, you know? So it creates just that little another place of that injection of kind of like fun and pop off and just kind of a little bit of a difference thing. The thing that I'm not as enamored with, I will say, is the guilds themselves. I love the variability of the four guilds. What I think that those guilds add, though, is a decision point that's really a little bit difficult for me, for my brain. It's like, it's an interesting one. It's, do you want points or do you want a big action, right? But you have to stop and evaluate that. And there's multiple options, and the spots are also like, it adds in this layer of, well, do, if I don't take it, then am I leaving it for John or am I leaving it for Nick? And I remember in our two-player game, it was my first play, I sat there for a couple of minutes trying to calculate out whether I should take the 6 points, because there's just a straight victory points, which is kind of boring, but like it's there. And so you're like, well, should I leave these 6 points on the table or should I go take this spot that gives me an extra action token and a couple of other benefits, right? And I had to sit there, and then suddenly my brain went into this whole other space of like trying to calculate the value of everything. I was like, well, if I take this action, but then I'll have to spend eggs, and eggs are points. And like, you can easily lose yourself in this game and frankly in Wingspan, but in this game in particular, because you have to spend eggs to keep exploring your rows, it's very easy to be like, to get lost in that calculation of what am I spending points on and doing points on and what am I giving up? And to have that added layer here, that is just like the one AP I didn't need in this game. And I'm sure that will get easier as I play it more, but that part of it, I'm just not quite as over the moon on.
So I'm curious, Nick, you've played this once.
Once.
Did you like it? As we were playing, I could not figure it out from the tone of voice and stuff.
I was really serious when we were playing, but I think it's because it was just my first play, and I was just crunching and trying to like keep up. I also I'm not good at multiplayer solitaire in the sense of like I'm just gonna pay attention to myself. Like I want to see what other people are doing too, so I was trying to figure out my stuff while also figuring out what you guys were doing. So I think that's a more reflection of my brain cycles running than anything else. I did like it. I think it's really interesting. The question I want to ask, which we can segue into in a minute, is if you like Wingspan, will you like Wormspan? And I'm really grappling with that, because I think Wormspan is the game that I wish Wingspan was when it came out. Because when Wingspan first came out, I was like, this game's not for me. It's not heavy enough. Yeah, even when I was playtesting, I was like, I'm happy to playtest this, but like, this isn't a Nick game. Like, I'm not like invested in it. And the more I've played it, the more I've come to like it. And in particular, I've come to like it for what it is and what it does and who it appeals to.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've really come to respect about Wingspan. It has frankly taught me a lot about what board gamers consume and what people are into, right? The fact that that game like absolutely exploded is something really to pay attention to and think about. So Wormspan is definitely closer to the style of game that I want to play. I think though, because Wingspan is more buttery smooth, on after first play, my instinct is that I like the buttery smoothness of Wingspan a little bit more, even though Wormspan is certainly more satisfying to sink my teeth into. Just the like crunch there is obviously nicer for me. So I liked that, and I liked exploring the changes. I'm looking forward to playing Wormspan some more. I'll certainly be playing Wingspan some more. I think that the thing I'm struggling most with Wormspan now is I'm asking myself the question of, when am I going to choose to play this game? And I think that's more a reflection of like me struggling these days with what does medium weight gaming do? Like, do I want to be playing? Like, I know when I want to play light games and who I want to play light games with, and I know when I want to play heavy games and who I want to play heavy games with. So I'm stuck with this question of like, when am I playing medium games? I think Wormspan sits square in that spot right there.
That's really interesting. I feel very similar to Nick, I think, on this one. I'm actually just trying to sit here and try to answer the question you're asking. If someone likes Wingspan, will they like Wormspan? And, you know, honestly, For me, I think it really goes down to why do you like Wingspan? I've never looked at Wingspan and thought, wow, I love the mechanics of that game. That's why I go play it, because it's not why I go play it. I think I do kind of love it for what it is, which is a game that, you know, I want to share with people because of the theme. And mm-hmm. So for me, it was kind of an interesting thing to be like, when you guys first brought up Wormspan, I was like, I don't know why I would want to play a re-theme of Wingspan. Wingspan is the perfect theme. But it's not a re-theme of Wingspan. It is a different game. It is an evolution. It's, I don't even know if you can say that. It's just a reimagining with the same core concept, but done as a gamer's game. And that's really fun to me. And it's been really satisfying to play. And I think that's really cool. And I think there's room for both. And I think it's kind of almost a disservice to both to place them in direct comparison with each other, frankly.
Agreed. I think where I've landed is that if you have somehow not played either of these games and you are a gamer, you should probably try Wormspan.
Yeah.
And if you haven't played either of these games and you're not a gamer or you're new to gaming, you should play Wingspan.
Yeah. Or you're sharing this with someone who's not a gamer, you should still play Wingspan. Don't take them Wormspan.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Nick, you said, you know, if you like Wingspan, will you like Wormspan? My take is if you love Wingspan, I'm not sure if Wormspan is going to be for you. If you liked Wingspan, but it didn't really scratch the itch hard enough, then I think Wormspan could be significantly more likely to hit. I mean, that is essentially me in a nutshell.
I love that statement. I think that's super on the
like spot. The first time I played Wingspan, I was like, this is such a cool game. And the second time I played Wingspan, I was like, this is fun. And then I played it a third time and then I sold it. I pretty quickly realized it didn't have the kind of crunch I was looking for. And I got to be honest, I've really enjoyed all three of my plays of Wormspan, like way more than I expected, because I was going into it from, well, you know, Wingspan is a very good game, but it's not really for me. And this one, like, I don't even generally like pop-off games because of the downtime. But I just really like the headspace of piecing together of the combos. And I guess it's hard to really put my finger on it, but for me, as somebody who enjoys, well, kind of the gamut of games, I generally like medium to heavier games on average than lighter games, but I have felt just a lot of joy. Like, I'm just happy when I'm playing this game. I'm really happy with the decisions, as opposed to being frustrated by the restrictions that the game is throwing my way. And I think when I think about myself and Wingspan, I want more buttons to press, more levers and all that kind of stuff, and Wormspan just adds those in. So yeah, I mean, for me, I would happily not play Wingspan ever again. I have to be honest, like, if somebody really wanted to, I would. We played it last weekend and I was really happy to play it for the comparison point, but I spent the entire time thinking, this is so much less interesting than Wormspan. The whole time I was just like, I would definitely rather be playing Wormspan. I'm mostly doing this for research purposes because I hadn't played it in so long. But, you know, that's, again, not me sliding the other game. That's just purely a preference thing. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool that there is a span game for me, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it speaks also to, you really have to ask yourself to, you know, I think we all have to ask ourselves this with this particular hobby. Like, what does a game mean to you? Is a game something that you need to have and play 10 times and become an expert in and want to, you know, how much depth do you need the game to have? Or is the game something you're going to play a couple of times, or it's a game that's on your shelf because it is a great game to share, or it's a great game to that's why I still own Wingspan, is because it's such a good gateway game. It's so accessible to so many people, right? But I'm with John. Like, I'm not looking to go play Wingspan a bunch of times because I feel like I've seen everything that the game has to offer as a gamer. But I love sharing it with people, and I still love, you know, I've got all these pieces, and I was telling John my copy's all tricked out, and I love it. And I should add, and I think this is a caveat that I just personally want to add, I have only played with one of the expansions, and I have a couple of them, and this whole episode, at least my opinions in it, are based on not having explored more of those expansions, which I do think add in more elements that turn the game turn Wingspan into more of a gamer's game. Mm-hmm.
So, Anastasia, do you like Wormspan? Like, you talked about what people might like it, but I'm just curious about where you land after two plays.
I like it quite a bit, actually. I don't know if it's a game I need to own. I don't know if it's a game, because I'm kind of with Nick right now, where I don't know where midweight gaming falls for me anymore. And so it's really interesting for me to have only played this twice and to be sitting here kind of giving our impressions to everyone. The first play of this, I tried to play it like Wingspan and it kind of fell on my face a little bit, and then it kind of came together. But I was sitting there watching John have these crazy turns, and frankly, I was happy for John, but I wasn't really happy for myself. It wasn't as fun to watch, you know, him, do this when I couldn't seem to get anything to kind of come together, which for me makes this a game that is, you know, it does take a player two to kind of figure out what the game is. And I remember finishing that game and being like, okay, we need to play this again because now I understand it. Now I can see the potential there. And then, you know, we played it tonight and I had a lot of fun with it again, but now I feel like I see more of it. Now it's kind of unfolding. I'm actually really curious to see how it does feel after five or six plays or something. Because I will say, in our last play tonight, one thing, I think Nick, you pointed out something really interesting in our conversation tonight about how you don't like it when a game, you can kind of do everything in a game. You kind of feel like, you know, sometimes it's nice to have the game end before you feel like you can maximize it. Tonight, I had an extra action token and I didn't love that, you know, I had no more spaces to put things. So I'm curious to see how this one kind of balances out as I get better at it, as the people I'm playing with get better at it, as things happen. I'm very curious to see how this one keeps playing, because it's had a couple of rough edges in my first two plays, but it's also had a lot of really fun things to explore. So curious.
Well, my mom bought a copy and she loves Wingspan and is a gamer, so I'm sure I'll be playing this one a bunch more.
Nice. Well, that was fun. I these comparison episodes are cool to kind of dig into. Like going back and forth between various topics like this is something that we haven't really done a lot of, and it feels fresh to me anyway. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
And congratulations to whoever puts in the comments how many times we said birds when we meant dragons and dragons when we meant birds.
Yes. Yeah. Many, many times. So yeah, that's going to bring this one to a close. As always, we would love to hear what you have to say about this this game and this episode. You can find a link to the YouTube version of this one in the description, and you can leave comments over there. We love to see that. We love to answer those. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.